It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Welcome to the University of Fish. I am the Professor Tim Fisher, and it is Media Days once again. We're going to continue our whirlwind tour around the country. Today, we're going to bring you the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and we're headed out to Vegas for the Mountain West as well. So we're going to wrap up Media Days this week. Six different conferences we gave you, the Power Five and the Mountain West, to get you ready for college football, and we are almost just about a month away. I know I am feeling it. I know you're feeling it. It is the best time of the year where you can sit down on a Saturday and watch college football for 13, 14 straight hours. You know, the wife and the kids, they understand it's college football. And I know I do it each week. I'm going to hope try to get out to where I can watch some games with you. We'll set that up, have watch parties around the city. Will be a great time for everyone involved, especially me, because it's college football, and you gotta love it. But before we get to the media days around the different conferences today, we've gotta talk some other college football news. And you know, if I'm talking college football news, it's not good news. It's always bad news. And former Ole Miss coach Houston Nutt, his attorney says the university trying to postpone the release of Hugh Freeze's phone records by redacting personal information from the calls, which he says is not permitted under the state's open record laws. In a letter he sent to Ole Miss assistant counsel yesterday, the attorney, Thomas Mars, accused the school of a pattern of concealing information from the public by manufacturing bogus exemptions and illegal roadblocks that plainly violate the Freedom of Information Act. Now, the school is saying it's going to take forever to do this, and it's going to cost about $25,000 to do this. And so, you know, who knows what Coach Hugh Freeze is doing. But former coach Houston Nutt, the Right Reverend Houston Nutt, is going to have none of this because his name is getting dragged through the mud by Ole Miss, saying a bunch of these violations that they're under investigation for right now are under his watch, when he knows it's under Coach Freeze's watch. Can't call him coach right now. He has spoke up, but he's not a coach right now, and it's going to be hard for him to get back into coaching, at least in the Division I level. So we'll have to follow this as it progresses to see what all, how many hookers that Coach Freeze called. Now, Tennessee Volunteers head coach Butch Jones, well, they're going to open the season with three games in 13 days. That's rough. I mean, okay, you know, if you play two games in 9 days, that's kind of tough as it is. But they're opening September 4th against Georgia Tech at that new stadium in Atlanta. That's going to be a good game there. Going to have a lot of people there because Tennessee, you know, not that far from Atlanta. Then they host Indiana State in their home opener there in Tennessee before they go to rival Florida on September 16th. So you got Georgia Tech, Indiana State, and Florida all between September 4th and September 16th. It's kind of crazy. I hope they're hitting it hard in camp because it's going to be a long 13 days for those Tennessee Volunteers. They'll be lucky if they come out of that 2-1. I know they're going to win one game. They will beat Indiana State in their home opener. Georgia Tech's going to be tough, especially there in Atlanta. And then the game against Florida, whew, that could be a deciding factor in the SEC East this year. I'm sure we'll be talking to our friend down in Florida, Mark Moses, before that game, because that game could get ugly for the Volunteers. The Pitt Panthers, they're in a little bit of hot water. Well, the team's not, but four players are. You have one that is being dismissed for conduct detrimental to the program, and that's defensive end Rory Blair. He's been kicked off the team but you also have suspensions for three players, two of them starters, one not. Jordan Whitehead, starting safety, starting offensive lineman Alex Buxer, and linebacker Quentin Wiggins, all been suspended for the first three games of the season. So Pitt's going to have to work hard to get through all that as they start the season off with one dismissed and three others. And Rory Blair, the one that's gone, bye-bye, he was a starter. So you're looking at three defensive players and a starting offensive lineman. That does not bode well for the University of Pittsburgh and the Panthers in the ACC, because they're already going to be a bottom feeder in the ACC. This is not going to help matters much whatsoever. Now, we're going to go to the Pac-12 here in just a little bit as we talk media days. But one of the biggest things that came out of media days in the Pac-12, USC football coach Clay Helton, he was asked, is OJ going to be welcomed back into the fold? Heisman Trophy winner, big time USC alum. He's going to be out on parole October 1st, about the time that USC starts playing some of their major games. Very simple answer from Coach Clay Helton. No. No, OJ is not going to be welcomed back into the USC program. I can't say I disagree with him. I can't say I do. But, it all depends where you land with OJ. If you believe he did do the murders there in Brentwood, then he has the problems that he's serving time for right now. He served time for that. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he's done that. He served his time, but it's still the whole question around the Brentwood murders. So I can kind of understand how that could be a distraction to a USC team that has college football playoff aspirations. So I don't know if they'd want OJ around the team. And obviously it doesn't matter if they want it. Coach Clay Helton said, ain't going to happen. Okay, so that's enough of the news of the day. When we come back, we're going to jump right in to media days, and we're going to start off in the Pac-12 when we come back right here on the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
I'm Danny Noakes from Super Sports 101.7, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. Now, the past couple of weeks, we've taken you to the ACC, the SEC. Last week, the Big 12 Media Days. Today, we're going Big 10, Mountain West, but we're going to start it off with the Pac-12. We are joined by Saul Bookman. He is the sports editor of the college paper there at the University of Arizona, and he covers the Pac-12 better than anybody I know. Saul, how you doing this morning?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. You're almost becoming an adjunct professor here on the University of Fish by the times we've had you on. Because, of course, you were on talking basketball and spring football earlier in the year, and now we're back talking football, and there's nothing else like it. Pac-12 Media Days have wrapped up in Hollywood, and I was looking at the best quotes from Media Days, and we're going to start off with Arizona, because you got to start off with Rich Rod. You do. I mean, because, one, he didn't hate on the Pac-12 this year, which is the first time in his whole time he's been at Arizona that he didn't hate on the Pac-12, but it looks like you could almost have an AARP meeting in the quarterback room. You've got like a kid that's like 35. I know he's not 35, but you've got the kid coming in, and I can't even call him a kid. What is his leadership going to do in that quarterback room?
Well, he's Donovan Tate. He's 9 years removed from playing football in the first place. So he's been playing Major League Baseball, or trying to make a career in Major League Baseball. It's going to be interesting. He's kind of a wild card. I know a lot of people are kind of high on him, some others not so high. I mean, 9 years removed from football, how much can you possibly see from a guy that far removed? So it'll be interesting to see what he provides. I know Rich Rod was talking about how him, as well as his own son, Rhett Rodriguez, coming into the quarterback room has kind of provided a level of maturity. But at the end of the day, if you have you know, I guess somebody said, if you have more than one quarterback, then you really have no quarterbacks. And I don't know, that could be the case this year with Arizona.
Well, now, if you look at prior times that you've had a quarterback that far removed, you can see some success. Chris Wendke won the Heisman Trophy, took Florida State to the national championship. They lost that game to Oklahoma. But then you also had Brandon Whedon, who did the same thing at Oklahoma State, had a hand out in the NFL. Now we've got Wendke as an offensive assistant there at Alabama. But we've seen it happen in the past where the maturity level helped them, especially because, you know, they could read things a little bit quicker and better than someone who had not really been in a competitive situation before. Do you think that could possibly happen this year with the Wildcats?
I mean, one of the big differences between those two guys and the system that Rich Rod runs is really the read option. It's not a pro-level style offense, first of all. Second of all, you got to think about the receiving core that both of those guys had. I mean, you had Justin Blackmon over at Oklahoma State. You had Peter Warwick over at Florida State when Chris Wendke was there. Two dynamic receivers who really were able to help out their quarterback big time. And you saw that once Whedon and Wendke got to the pros, they weren't able to have as much success because those windows are tighter and the overall talent level isn't as wide a margin as it was at Florida State and Oklahoma State. Arizona, their receiving corps is probably one of the worst, you know, if not in the Pac-12, or if not in the country, in the Pac-12 for sure. They lost a lot of guys last year, Nate Phillips and Samaje Grant. So whoever is going to be handling the rock, they're going to have to be accurate with their passes. Really the most premier receiver that they have back is Shun Brown. Other than that, it's going to be heavily relying on the running game. And last year they were able to do it sometimes. They were near the top of the Pac-12 in running overall. Their passing game was 108th in the country. And if that doesn't improve, then it's not going to matter who's behind the center, because their wide receivers might just let them down anyway.
Okay, we just spent more time on Arizona football than I think anybody will nationally this year, because they are picked sixth in the Pac-12 South. But the Pac-12 South is where I see most of the power, even though Washington was in the college football playoff last year. But you've got USC that is predicted to win the Pac-12 South. And then you have the defending champions of the Pac-12 South picked third. Do you see Colorado falling off that much this year?
Oh, you know, I'm going to say record-wise, they might be pretty close to where they were a year ago. The problem is, I mean, there's so many wild cards in the South compared to the North. You know, in the South, you know, you have USC, which seemingly every year comes in as a top 10, top 5, prohibited favorite, and somehow they always fall on their face. You know, will that be the case this year? And I don't know if it will be, because Sam Darnold seems like he is the real deal. But a lot of people thought that about Josh Rosen coming into last year, and he didn't have such a great year. He was also plagued with injuries, but it's going to be interesting to see if Colorado can maintain that level. They surprised everybody last year. Their defense, I think, more than their offense, was the most surprising thing. And I mean, they were really deep. Several defensive backs going in the NFL draft, which surprised a lot of people as well. So if they can maintain that level of development, I think they have a strong chance to compete for a Pac-12 championship once again. I think them and Utah are the two kind of wild cards that you really don't know too much about, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but we know that Utah is not that great away from the mountains there in Utah. When they get on the road, they're not a really good road team. So we'll have to see what goes with them. And now on back to Colorado. Coach Mike McIntyre had a great year at San Jose State and left, so he didn't get to follow up his success. This is the first time he's had success and gets to follow it up, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But back to USC. Is Sam Darnold the best quarterback in the nation?
If he's not, I'd like to see who is. That kid, especially seeing him play in last year towards the end of the season, I mean, everything about him was just spot on. He looked like he had the composure of, you know, a 15-year veteran. If there was a college version of Tom Brady, I would say that his demeanor would be the best representation of that. He seems like he's I think NFL teams are going to tank to try and get this kid next year.
Okay, let's move to the Pac-12 North. Okay, Washington is the prohibitive favorite to win the North, but then Stanford, you know, they did lose Christian McCaffrey, but they've got someone good coming in right behind them. Washington State is picked third in the Pac-12 North above Oregon, which to a lot of people will be going, really? Or is Oregon that down? Are they really that down?
I don't think they're really that down. I think they'll bounce back, but I think Washington State is that good. I think Washington State with Luke Falk back especially, they're going to be a phenomenal team. They're going to have the best air attack in the country. I don't see anybody else in the country that can put up the numbers that they can through the air. And, you know, obviously you got crazy Mike Leach up there trying to do his thing. So I think Washington State, in my opinion, it'll come down to Washington State and Washington. But Oregon, you know, Coach Taggart is trying to get them to bounce back. I think that they're doing a good job. They've stole a lot of recruits from Arizona near signing day. Braxton Burmeister, one of those guys, an incoming quarterback who was widely considered to be in the running for a starting job if he would have come here to Arizona. He seems like he's going to be the number two starter this year. They're just really deep. They bounced back from a rough couple years, and I think they're gonna do well. I don't know if they'll come close to Washington or Washington State or Stanford this year, but I think, you know, 7 or 8 wins would be a significant improvement from the 3 wins they had a year ago.
That is very true, especially, and then that's not what they're used to up there in the Eugene area. But okay, let's fast forward to that first weekend in December. Who do we see playing in the Pac-12 championship game?
Oh, man. I'm pretty high on Washington State. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Washington State. I think Washington's going to fall back. And I'm going to finally say that USC is finally going to get their act together. And Sam Darnold's going to lead them to a Pac-12 championship. And I think USC is going to end up winning the Pac-12 and have a spot in the playoff.
Well, you know that coach, that crazy Coach Leach, as you called him, said that on Thursdays he believes that Washington State could beat the Patriots. And so, you know, who knows when it comes to the Pac-12 championship if the Cougars make it up there. And I guarantee you the college football game day set would be riddled with Cougar flags all over. But let's talk about the next weekend in December. Do we have anybody in New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation?
Sam Darnold. If it's not Sam Darnold, then it could possibly be a guy like maybe Luke Falk or even Jake Browning if Washington's able to repeat their success from a year ago. I don't see anybody else in the conference that's going to have the amount of media attention that is required to get that East Coast vote like a Sam Darnold would be. And so for that reason, I would say Sam Darnold's probably the best choice from the Pac-12 to possibly win the Heisman.
Could the Rosen one make it to New York?
No, I don't think Josh Rosen will, mostly because I don't think it's a knock on Josh Rosen himself, but I think Jim Mora being on the hot seat and UCLA being so inconsistent, despite having almost as much talent as USC, I think that's what's ultimately going to keep him from having a chance at going to a Heisman ceremony or even having a tremendous amount of success this year. I think UCLA is looking at 7 or 8 wins at the most.
And it's going to be an interesting year in the Pac-12. A lot of people say it could be the most competitive conference in the nation. I don't know. I think the ACC would argue with that. And, of course, the SEC is always thinking they're the best. But we'll have to see how the season pans out. Saul Bookman, look forward to talking to you throughout the season. Maybe not so much about Arizona football, but just what's going on in the Pac-12, because I don't know what Rich Rod will get together there this year.
Well, he might not be around after this year, so I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Saul Bookman, for giving us a lowdown on the Pac-12 as we just wrapped up Pac-12 Media Days in Hollywood. But we are just getting started on our whirlwind tour around the country today. We're going to go next to Chicago for Big Ten Media Days right here on the University of Fish. We'll be right back here on Extra Sports 1300.
Hi, Tom Baudette. Apparently, the hip thing for businesses to do these days is target millennials. So it may sound sus coming from this baby boomer, but Motel 6 is a V-great place for your squad to stay woke or asleep. The updated rooms are hashtag blessed with contemporary floors, bedding, and flat-screen TVs that are totally on fleek. Plus, their prices are always low AF. I'm Tom Baudette, and we'll keep it lit for you. Book online at Motel6.com.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flow.
Motor, cycle, and car insurance bundled like macaroni and cheese, please. I got discounts up the wazoo. Yahoo! Saving money, riding down the open road on my bike, dropping fine rhymes, then dropping the mic. Assuming that's okay with the venue.
Bundle your motorcycle and car insurance and save with Progressive. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
This is Mike McIntyre from the University of Colorado Football, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. I am the Professor Tim Fisher. We are joined now by Jesse Temple. Jesse Temple, you've heard of before. He's a University of Wisconsin beat reporter, and he's got his first book coming out, 100 Things Wisconsin Fans Should Know. And we'll talk about the book at a later date. I want to talk Big Ten Media Days right now because they just wrapped up. And last year in the Big Ten, we had three teams that in the last month of the season were looking at a possible playoff berth, that being Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. Ohio State eventually did make it in. And are we seeing something like that this year? Were you feeling that in Chicago?
I think it's certainly possible. Obviously, we have a long way to go between now and the final college football playoff rankings. But, you know, Penn State should be pretty darn good, and so should Ohio State. You know, I wonder if Michigan is going to be able to maintain in year three under Jim Harbaugh. But to me, I look at the West, and Wisconsin is the team that has the clearest regular season path, at least, toward potentially getting into that top four. And, you know, I've written about this in the last couple of weeks. The Badgers are going to be favored in every single regular season game. They have a legitimate chance to be 12-0 as Big Ten West champions entering the league championship game against presumably an Ohio State or a Penn State. And so, you know, I don't see any reason why there can't be three teams duking it out going into the last couple of weeks.
And so you're not really putting a whole lot of credence in what Mike Riley's doing at Nebraska to be competitive this year in the West?
I wouldn't say that, but, you know, if you're asking me who's going to be in the college football playoff discussion, you know, that's quite a leap for Nebraska. But I do think, you know, if you were to ask me which team has the potential to threaten Wisconsin the most in the West, I do believe it's Nebraska just because of all the offensive firepower they have. You know, a lot has been made of Tanner Lee taking over at quarterback, and, you know, Wisconsin has to play in Lincoln. There's something to be said for home field advantage in college football, and if the Cornhuskers can win that, then obviously they would hold a potential tiebreaker down the road with Wisconsin. So, you know, I think Nebraska is going to continue to improve under Mike Riley, but the question is, can they take that next step, get back to the Big Ten championship game?
Does Hayden Fry – not Hayden Fry, I'm going way back in history. Does Kirk Ferentz, who is now the longest tenured coach in NCAA with Bob Stoops retiring because he was hired a month after Stoops was, can he get the Iowa team back together to where they're actually competitive in the West?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've been competitive in recent years. I mean, 2 years ago they went undefeated in the regular season and were – you know, just a whisker away from getting into the college football playoffs. So yeah, I mean, you know, and when I said, you know, which team can threaten Wisconsin the most, I certainly would add Iowa to that mix. I mean, you know, the last few years, you know, obviously 8-0 in 2015 in the league, and they were 6-3 last year and tied for second in the West. So, yes, Iowa is always going to be a contender in the West. And to me, you know, most years it's going to be Iowa, Wisconsin, or Nebraska.
It is because, you know, Minnesota jumped up there for a year. Northwestern has those little storybook seasons every now and then that falls apart at the end. Indiana, I don't know when they've been last relevant in football, maybe when Randall L. was there. And Purdue, you pretty much have to go back to Drew Brees. I mean, sadly enough. But we know that the East is where most of the power is. I said Indiana. I meant Illinois, and that program's been a dumpster fire ever since Zook took over there. But in the East, Michigan State down year last year. Does D'Antonio bring them back up this year, or do they still stay middle of the pack in the East?
Well, it's just, I mean, that's like a murderer's row of Big Ten East, you know. When you have Penn State coming up to the level that they're at now, and of course Ohio State and Michigan as well, you know, you have to be pretty darn good to even crack the top three of the East. And of course Michigan State regressed last year. It's kind of funny because, you know, Michigan State was nationally ranked going into a home game against Wisconsin early in the Big Ten season. And Wisconsin won that game, and there was just a huge backslide for the Spartans. So they went from this big high of beating Notre Dame in the non-conference to winding up 1-8 in conference play and 3-9 overall. I mean, I would like to give Mark D'Antonio the benefit of the doubt, because before last year it seemed like they were winning 11 games every year. So, but to ask if they can get into that, you know, top two, top three, that would be quite a leap. But you know, for Michigan State, it should be at least get back to a bowl game. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Now, last year, we didn't really have any huge Heisman contenders coming into the year, other than, of course, there in Michigan. Why is his name slipping me? Jabril Peppers. Jabril Peppers was like the Heisman candidate for the Big Ten last year. JT Barrett was talked about a little bit. But this year, you got JT Barrett coming back. You've got Saquon Barkley at Penn State. Do you see anybody else that could have a breakout year and get into that trophy presentation talk at the end of the year?
Well, the one name that stands out to me is Trace McSorley, the Penn State quarterback, and it certainly helps when you have someone like Saquon Barkley, who's one of the best running backs in college football, helping you out to keep defenses honest. And you know, Trace McSorley, I mean, the season he put together, especially the second half, was phenomenal. I think he threw for 384 yards or something like that in the Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin, just absolutely torched the defense that had been, you know, one of the best in the country. So, you know, he's somebody that I would definitely look for, because a lot of the Heisman stuff, at least to open the season, is hype and name recognition, and he certainly has those things and also the talent to back it up.
He does. Do you see any spoilers on the East side? I mean, does Rutgers jump up and scare somebody one week, or Indiana or a Maryland, even though all three of those teams have been almost, I mean, I hate to say it, but pathetic in the East. Rutgers has had no success, nor has Maryland, since they came into the Big Ten. But do you see any of them possibly playing a spoiler?
I mean, I guess if I had to pick one, I like what DJ Durkin has done at Maryland. You know, to get that team into a bowl game is, you know, pretty good sense of accomplishment last year. But, you know, to say that they're going to put it all together and, you know, beat the Penn State or an Ohio State or Michigan even, is asking a lot. I mean, I think that for the foreseeable future, you know, those are the three that are going to kind of reign, and then Michigan State, if they can get back to that level. So if you're in Indiana or Maryland or Rutgers, good luck.
Okay. So now we're at the first weekend of December. Who do we see playing for the East and the West?
Well, I think it's going to be Wisconsin out of the West. It'll be the third time in the last 4 years since the division split that they'd get there. And then to me, you know, to me, I look at it, is it Ohio State or is it Penn State? I will pick Ohio State because I'll never bet against Urban Meyer, even though they didn't get there last year. They somehow managed to get into the college football playoffs. So, to me, it's Ohio State, Wisconsin. And in that matchup, if it were to happen hypothetically, I would pick Ohio State.
Well, we're talking with Jesse Temple. Jesse, I want to bring you back on later, closer to that September 1st book release, because everybody should know about Badgerland, because, I mean, there's some great history from the Wisconsin Badger program. I mean, and it's not just Ron Dayne. It's not just the J.J. Watts. I mean, there's a lot more history to the Badger program, and I want to bring you back on for that. But I want to thank you for coming on today. I'm talking some Big Ten total, and we'll get more Badger-centric next time.
All right, thanks.
We're going to keep it in the Big Ten for just a couple more minutes. And one of the biggest stories, no pun intended, because I can make lots of jokes when it comes to this, Joey Julius, he's a kicker for Penn State. He is no longer on the team, and we're joined now by Matt Martell. He's a sports writer for the Penn State Collegian. I believe that's the correct name of the paper. Is that right, Matt?
It's called the Daily Collegian, but it's close enough. Not a big deal.
I was close. Matt is pretty much becoming an adjunct professor here on the University of Fish. We've talked to him about college baseball. We talked to him about Penn State spring game earlier in the year. We've had him on a few times, so So, Matt, welcome back to the University of Fish. Let's talk a little bit about Joey Julius. How much of an impact will this have on the team and the morale of the team? Because he's a beloved figure up there in State College.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it'll have an impact on the morale. I'm sure it'll have a significant one, but I can't measure that because I'm not in the Penn State clubhouse. But as far as on the field goes, it's a huge loss. Because when you look at Tyler Davis, who was a great kicker as far as field goal kicking, extra point kicking, he set a record at Penn State for most field goals in a row without missing one. He's great. But when it comes to kickoff duties, he's not as good because he doesn't have the leg strength to get it all the way to the end zone and get a touchback. Or what Joey was really good at was kicking it so that the returner would field it at the 1 yard line or the 2 yard line, and Penn State had a great return or had a great kickoff team, so they would run him down and keep him within the 25 yard line.
Now,
so losing Joey, yeah.
Now, if you're not up to speed on this story, what it is, Joey Julius is no longer on the Penn State team because of an eating disorder he's been struggling with his whole life. And a lot of times when you think of an eating disorder, okay, maybe they're anorexic or bulimic. No, he is a binge eater. If you don't know who Joey Julius is, he's the big guy that did kickoffs for Penn State. And you've seen bigger guys doing kickoffs like, you know, you look back at a Sebastian Janikowski who could just boom the ball. He's still doing it in the NFL. But with Joey Julius, I mean, it's a, and once again, no pun intended, it's a big story. And it's like one of the heaviest stories of the week. Yes, I'm trying to make all sorts of jokes here, but it's a serious condition, isn't it?
Oh, it's a very serious condition, and one that he really has no control over. When he was in, I mean, the news first broke that he spent time in an eating rehabilitation center or a treatment center when back in October 2016, after he made a big hit on in the trying to get a returner from Minnesota, and the next kickoff he was targeted. Guy was ejected from the game, and you know Joey was kind of shaken that they were targeting him, and all 107,000 people in attendance in Beaver Stadium went nuts for him. They were cheering for him. They were booing the guy that targeted him. So that's where it started. And when he realized that Happy Valley was behind him, he took to Facebook and he posted a message that said where he had been, why he had missed summer workouts, because he had checked into an eating rehabilitation treatment center in St. Louis. This is now, he checked in May 2016. He posted the message in October 2016, and now in the spring of 2017, April 1st, he checks back in to the treatment center where his mom actually reached out to us because he was supposed to do a big national eating disorder awareness walk in State College, and she was there for it. And it turns out he couldn't go because he checked into the rehabilitation center the night before. So that's how we confirmed that. But when it comes to him now, he was in the treatment center. He became public again in May of this year of why, where he was, which was in the treatment center. And then he is now apparently, from what he says, he's out of the treatment center. He took to Twitter right after news broke that he is no longer on the team to say that for all those worried about him, because a lot of people were reaching out to him saying, are you okay? Is everything all right? Because everybody tied it to the eating disorder. Well, he's not in the treatment center anymore, which leads you to think, well, maybe we don't know the reason why he left. I mean, you got to think it has something to do with it. But as far as we know right now, there's no specific reason given.
Well,
but that's the whole history of him.
As much as you know, has James Franklin closed the door on a possible return?
As much as I know, he has not closed the door. And a lot of people, when they reported it, said that he has departed from the team. He's no longer with the team. See, I didn't get that. When I texted Penn State spokesperson, the football team spokesperson, she said that he will not be with the team or will not be playing with the team this fall.
So he
now he's not, so he realistically could suit up again next year if everything gets taken care of. And James Franklin said when they talked to him, we had a reporter there. I wasn't there, but we had a reporter there with him in Big Ten Media Days in Chicago. And James Franklin said something along the lines of, we love Joe. He'll still have a role on this team.
Well, that's good to hear, because from every perspective you can look at Joey Julius, he's a good kid. I know he's beloved there at in State College. So I wish him the best. Thank you for the update on him, Matt Martell. We look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
And that'll put a wrap on the Big Ten for this week. Thanks to Jesse Temple and to Matt Martell for joining us, giving us the skinny, no pun intended, once again, on what's going on in the land of 10. When we come back, we're going to Las Vegas. That's right. We're going to Mountain West Media Days. When we come back here on the University of Fish, I am the Professor Tim Fisher. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Hi, this is Josh Ward with Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee, and you are listening to the University of Fish.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. We are joined now by the voice of the Boise State Broncos. He's been at Media Days for the Mountain West in Vegas all week, and now he's talking to us here on the University. Bob Beeler, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Everything's wrapped up. Coaches, players are headed home, and this year the practice will be probably as early as some next week because no double days. They've given them an extra week so that they don't practice twice in the same day, and we're going to have college football just around the corner.
It is getting close, and I'm getting excited about it. Now, the Mountain West is one of the few conferences last year that could boast that they had three 10-plus team winners, 10-plus game winners in the conference. Not a lot of conferences could say that, but Boise, Air Force, and San Diego State all broke that 10-win mark last year. Is that going to happen again this year?
I think it's probable that it can happen because people are going to win some games, but one of the things that might stop it from happening is if the league is as balanced as people think it might be. San Diego looks to be the prohibitive choice in the West Division. Boise State, Colorado State, Wyoming all got first place votes, picked 1, 2, 3 in that order in the Mountain Division. And, you know, Air Force, New Mexico, and Utah State have all been competitive. So I would think that, you know, can somebody win 10 games? Yes, but it might be tough because you might have a lot of teams winning 8 or 9 because, you know, this one beats that one and somebody else beats somebody else. So it might be tough for people to, you know, rack up that 10 or 11 win season.
Well, let's start off with the prohibitive favorite, San Diego State. How much of a fall off do you see from them this year, or are they bringing back enough of the core that they're going to maintain that success?
Well, I think they're going to win their division. I think they're far enough ahead of Hawaii, who probably is the second best in that division. You've got three teams in that division that have first-year coaches, which means they are in flat-out rebuilding mode because all three coaches were let go. It was not like somebody moved on to greener pastures. So, and you've got a couple of other coaches that are, you know, 2 and 3 years. So San Diego State, prohibitive favorite. They lose Donnell Pumphrey, but Rashad Penny is just as good. Different kind of back. It's going to be a bigger, more of a run as opposed to run around you. I think where San Diego State might have a little trouble is they lost a lot of players on the defensive side of the ball. Now, Rocky Long is a really good defensive coach, and they seemingly have talent. But I think at least early in the season, they've got San Diego State has Arizona State on the road and Stanford at home in, I think, weeks 2 and 3. So they're going to need to be on point to have a chance to win those games against the Pac-12 teams. They're going to win. They got a returning quarterback. They don't ask the quarterback to do a whole lot. They have to more or less to manage the game. But I think that they're going to be good, but I don't think they're going to have to be as good to win the West as they would to win the Mountain. Less competition over there.
Okay. Now, is there anybody we could see make an appreciable change from last year? Because no one was over 500 in the West other than San Diego State, that either be in conference or their overall record. Because Hawaii, as you said, I mean, was the second place team. They're 4-4 in conference and 7-7 overall. Mm-hmm. Can someone break that 500 barrier this year?
It's a good question. I mean, Nevada, Vegas, UNLV is going to try to do what Mel did last year. They will have a third-year coach in Tony Sanchez. Third year was the charm for Wyoming with Craig Bohl going from 2 wins to 8 wins. We'll see what Tony Sanchez can do. They're going to start a redshirt freshman quarterback that a lot of people have compared to Cam Newton in size and in style, and Armani Rogers, again, a redshirt freshman. Two really good receivers. They're probably going to score some points. They might be the team to watch. You know, who's to say what Nevada, San Jose, and Fresno State have? Neither one of them did very good last year, and they have new coaches. So I would think probably not.
Does Fresno win a conference game this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think they will. I mean, the other teams in the league, it's not like you're playing the SEC West. So, no, Fresno State, for them to have won one game last year, to me, that's unbelievable. Fresno, the league, in my opinion, will come back to being where they were when Nevada and Fresno State on the west side can come back to close to where they were. I mean, those two teams, what they had done, say, in the early 2010s, versus what they're doing now, huge difference. I mean, you look at Derek Carr that played at Fresno. You look at Colin Kaepernick that played at Nevada. I mean, if those guys can put together the kind of team that they had, you know, 2010, 2011, that type of thing, they'll be back up there with San Diego State. But I just don't see that happening this year.
Well, let's talk about the competitive side of the conference, that being the mountain side, because you really have a toss-up of four or five teams that could actually jump up and possibly win this with the returning quarterback play that you've got at Wyoming. You've got, you know, you there in Boise, you've got a great quarterback coming back as well. New Mexico had a great season last year, and we've already mentioned Air Force winning more than 10 games last year. Although Boise is the pick right now, break down Wyoming, because I think Wyoming could be a dangerous team this year.
Well, Wyoming's got a couple of things that they're going to need to fix. They're going to need to find a running back. Brian Hill, who is one of the all-time leading rushers at the school, is gone. He went out early. They also have some other receivers that graduated. Hollister's gone. Gentry's gone. Those guys were playmakers last year for Wyoming. They do have Josh Allen back. He was the preseason player of the conference, as voted on by the media here this week. He's a guy that they're talking about being a first-round draft pick in the NFL. Some even saying he could go out as high as number one. So I think they have, you know, really good quarterback. Their defense probably, you know, will be the same or better than it was last year, and that's where they're hoping that they can kind of make some strides. But you're right. I think that, you know, they now believe they can win, and they have some pieces. They're going to need some guys, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to, you know, help Allen. He can't do it all.
I had Coach Mike McIntyre with me a couple weeks ago as he was in Colorado Springs. What does Colorado State do this year in that beautiful new stadium they have there in Fort Collins?
Well, they've got to build on what they did towards the end of last year. I mean, Nick Stevens started, was benched, came back when Colin Hill was injured, and then led them to a nice run. I think they won like 7 of their last 8 games. They're a team that they need to, you know, had Stevens, and he's hooking up with Michael Gallup, who's one of the best receivers in the league. They also have 3 running backs that are pretty good. Need to replace a few people in the offensive line, but, you know, you expect their offense probably be pretty good again. You know, they're going to need to be a little better on defense than they've been. I mean, you know, can they win the division? Yes. Can Wyoming win the division? Yes. I think the reason most people pick Boise State, you know, as I think there's a little more comfort there. I think more people, maybe Boise State isn't going to be what they were when, you know, Kellen Moore was quarterbacking and they were undefeated. But I think people believe Boise State will be a contender, will win a lot of games. And, you know, I think it's more of just, it's the safe pick. They know Boise State is good year in and year out. I mean, even when they're down, they're still good. So I think it was more of, you know what, we trust them to be in a contending role more so than the other two that haven't been up there that much.
Okay, well, Air Force, Steelhammer's gone, Robinette's gone, so they're
big. Thank goodness from Boise State's perspective.
So those two were gone. What has Troy Calhoun got this year?
Well, I think his biggest problem is, you mentioned Steelhammer's gone. Steelhammer is one of 10 starters that's gone. So he's got to replace 10 starters on the defensive side of the ball. So I think it's going to be a work in progress on the defensive side. He was talking to us today at Media Day saying, you know, sometimes you have backups that get in there and play a lot, but it sounds like the backups didn't play a whole lot. So they're really going to be green on the offensive side, on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, you know, you mentioned they lose Robinette, they lose Owens. I mean, you know, they've lost quite a bit, but, you know, McVay back as a running back and Workman as special is an option. So, you know, they'll probably be able to score some points early, but they've got a stretch late September, early October that sees four games in a row against the likes of, and I'm not sure I'm going to get this in correct order, but San Diego State, New Mexico, Michigan, and Navy. And I believe three out of four of those games are on the road. So, you know, we'll probably know pretty well at mid-October after that four-game stretch whether the Falcons are going to compete or not.
There's a lot of interest in that second week of the season when Air Force goes up to the Big House in Ann Arbor to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough game. I mean, I'll give the Mountain West credit. You know, I see South Florida listed as the favorite to win the group of fives, you know, near six bowl spot, Tim. But they're playing nobody outside the league. Illinois is the best team. I mean, you look at Air Force, they're tangling with Michigan. We're playing Washington State and BYU on the road at Boise State. Playing an underrated Troy team at home. Wyoming's playing Oregon at home. They're playing Iowa on the road. Colorado State's playing three power fives. They're playing Colorado. They're playing Oregon State to open their stadium on August 26th, and they're going to Alabama. And, you know, you look at San Diego State, another one of the really good teams in the league, and they're playing Stanford and they're playing Arizona State. So, I mean, you know, Mount West is going to challenge themselves. I mean, these are tough games. I mean, you got to win some, and especially if you got them at home. I mean, I wouldn't look at the Michigan game or Colorado State going to Alabama and think you're probably going to win the game. But, you know, you want to be competitive against them.
Exactly. Okay, so let's fast forward to that first weekend in December. Who do we have playing?
I think the safe pick is probably San Diego State for sure. And then, you know, I think Boise State probably, as I say, for me, obviously I look through blue and orange colored glasses calling their games, but I think they're going to have to work for it. I think the key to the thing is Boise State has to play San Diego State. The other two, if you're saying Colorado State and Wyoming are the contenders, neither one of them have to face San Diego State. So if Boise State goes and loses at San Diego State, they're going to have to sweep Colorado State and Wyoming. One's at home and one's on the road, because Boise State has not gotten to the championship game the last two seasons. They've been in the top spot, but they've been in a tie. And last year they lost a three-way tie on the tiebreaker. Wyoming had it, so they go, and the year before Air Force had it. So you can't lose in-division games. So the people that do best head-to-head in the divisions are going to be there. But if you want the safe pick, you go with Boise State, San Diego State. And, you know, you would make many more cases on the Mountain side for second teams that you could put in that championship game, I think, than you would on the West side.
Now, I know the one thing I don't want to see in the Mountain West this year is when it comes to bowl season, I don't want to see a Mountain West matchup in a bowl.
Like they had a couple of years ago with Colorado State, Nevada, and the Arizona Bowl. That's not desired. It was one of those things that happened. You know, I'm sure they'll try to make sure that it doesn't happen again, but at least they didn't play during the regular season that year.
At least that happened. Well, Bob, I know your time is short. I know you got to get back to Boise. I want to thank you for coming on the University of Fish this morning. Look forward to talking to you throughout the season as the Mountain West season ramps up.
Should be great. I think the teams, especially on the Mountain side, very competitive, a lot of fun. You better be ready to go each week.
Once again, a big thanks to Bob Beeler for joining us here on the University of Fish. He is the voice of the Boise State Broncos. We'll be hearing that voice here a lot because of, well, the dominance of Boise State they've had over the past decade or so in the Mountain West. And, of course, with them playing Colorado State, them playing Air Force, we will hear from him again. Want to thank him for coming on next week on the show. This is going to wrap up this week's show. We're done with media days, so it's time to start figuring out the season. We're going to start breaking down the University of Fish preseason top 25. That's right, I have my own top 25. You can make fun of it or do whatever you want with it. Comment on it. Go to University of Fish on Facebook. Let me know what you think about my top 25. And go there anyway. Go to Facebook, University of Fish. Like the page. You'll know what's coming up on the show each week. You'll get the podcast. As soon as it is up, you will see it there as well. And speaking of the podcast, always go to iTunes and subscribe. And that way you never miss any part of any show here on the University of Fish. So next week, what we're going to do, we'll go back to having a Heisman flashback, and we're going to have
25 through 16, the first 10 of my preseason top 25, and we'll even start talking about conference Heisman favorites. We'll get two or three from each conference and see who really has the best chance of taking the hardware the second weekend of December. So, and we'll also start talking about who's going to be in the playoffs. What bowls can people be looking at? We're going to do all those early season projections starting next week here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. We'll see you next week. Coming up next, the other football show with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden right here on Extra Sports 1300. I am the professor. Class dismissed.